Today's service is the first in featuring our monthly theme of integrity, the practice of living authentically. I'll read our opening words today, adapted from M. Scott Peck, as John Hopewell lights our chalice. Our community is a safe place precisely because no one is attempting to heal or convert you, to fix or change you. Instead, you are accepted here as you are. You are free to discard defenses, masks, disguises, free to seek your own psychological and spiritual health, free to become your whole and holy self. Wherever you are on your journey, we bid you welcome. May the light of your life shine within the flame of our chalice.
So my story today is a true story, and it's about how or why I think integrity is a bit of a superpower. The story takes place, well, it's about a man named Imam Abdul Qadir, who was born about 1,000 years ago. He was a beautiful baby with great big brown eyes. Oh, his mama loved him. And when he got to be old enough to go outside and play with the other children, off he went. Except he didn't really play all the time. What he loved to do was to watch. He'd watch and he'd wonder. And I kind of imagine that as he sat there watching the other children play, maybe they had a wheel and a stick and they were rolling it along. I bet he wondered, how fast is that wheel traveling? How many cubits per minute? Or maybe he wondered how many grains of sand there were in the vast desert that stretched out in all directions from the small village where he lived. Or maybe he wondered how far away that ball of fire that made their country so hot was. Questions, questions, questions. Abdul Qadir was always asking questions. His mom couldn't help but notice. And she thought, this boy needs to study. And so she sought out scholars, all the scholars in their village. And he learned calligraphy, that beautiful way of writing. And he learned poetry. He learned mathematics and geometry. He discussed philosophy and ethics. But still, he had questions, questions, questions. And his mom realized, this boy needs to keep studying. So she decided that she would send him to university. Just a little problem. It was far away to Baghdad. The university was free, but the journey was very far, and she would need to find a way for him to get there safely. It would cost a lot of money. So she began to take in extra washing and mending, and each time she was paid, she'd save the coins in a special jar. And finally, about the time he was old enough to go away, she had enough money. So she made an arrangement with some local camel drivers. She gave them a down payment, and he would pay the rest when he got to Baghdad. And he needed a little spending money, too. So she took the remaining coins, and she sewed them inside the lining of his coat so they'd be very safe. And then it was time to say goodbye. Well, that was a hard thing, her only son. Her parting words to him were, "Abdul, you will do well in the world if you remember always to be kind and always to be honest." Abdul was a serious boy. He promised. And then off he went up on top of that camel, and I can just imagine that the question he was asking, if any of you have ever ridden a camel, he would be asking, why do camels have to have two knees so that it's so awkward? But he did love being way up high and having a beautiful view. One day into the desert, 2 days into the desert, there were mountains now. And their journey took them into the mountains, into a narrow gorge. It was beautiful. The sand on the walls of that narrow passageway were not quite rainbow colors, but all kinds of colors. And he marveled at it as they moved in, until suddenly, out from a side channel of that gorge sprang a couple of bandits with scimitars. Whew. They demanded all the coins that anybody had. They reached into people's pockets and they grabbed their purses and they pulled their necklaces off. And they had what they thought was all the goods. But just to make sure, still with their swords, they said, "Does anybody else have money? Does anybody else have anything of value?" What had Abdul promised his mom? That's right. So he stepped forward and they said, "You, you're a poor boy. What do you mean you have riches?" And he said, "My mom sewed 40 silver dinar into the lining of my coat." Oh, one of the thieves' eyes lit up and he started to grab the coat. But the other thief stopped him. He said, "Wait a minute. I want to ask this boy something. Why did you speak up? We would never have known." And Abdul said, "Well, I promised my mother always to be honest, and I wanted to keep my promise." The thieves were so moved by this boy that they gave him his coat back. And then they took the big bag of all the stolen goods and they dropped them on the ground at his feet. They disappeared. Well, everybody was very happy. Oh, all the travelers got their money and their jewels back and they went to Baghdad. And Abdul enrolled in university and he studied long and hard and he became an imam, a wise man and a priest and a teacher. And stories have been told about him to this day.
Wow!
Yeah. But I think the reason that his integrity was such a superpower was because those thieves, they changed their ways. They stopped robbing and decided to follow his lead and become honest too. So there's a thought for all of us. Integrity spreads.
Integrity. We all understand that word, right? We know and admire people of integrity. We try to live that way ourselves. The dictionary defines integrity using words like honesty, ethics, moral character. Search for quotes on integrity and you will have a full inbox. My favorite is from C.S. Lewis, who famously said, "Integrity is doing the right thing even when no one else is watching." But if you continue reading that dictionary definition, you'll see meaning number two: whole, entire, undiminished, to preserve the integrity of the empire, as an example. Then it mentions a quality of soundness, an unimpaired condition, like the integrity of a ship's hull. That part of the definition rests on the root words integer, or whole number, integral, a core part of something, and integrate, to make something a part of a whole. That is the quality of integrity that we are going to be talking about today. In Unitarian theology, integrity is as much about wholeness as goodness. It's about each individual's personal spiritual wholeness. It's about what we can do to preserve that and make it consistent with our understanding of that first strength of character kind of integrity. It's a complicated thing, integrity. Here are a few questions to mull over. How would you describe your own personal wholeness, your sense of yourself as distinct from other people? Do you have words for this? Think of what quality it is that makes you, you. Do you have a name for that? Take a moment to think of your you-ness, your uniqueness. Our Unitarian Universalist principles affirm the inherent worth and dignity of every person. That is to say, it affirms your you-ness. You do not have to be perfect, but you do have to be yourself, your messy, complicated, imperfect but working on it self. Further, you're asked to be honest in your view of yourself and to accept yourself for who you are. As Quaker theologian Parker Palmer said, "The God of wholeness is not the God of what ought to be, but of what is." He asks us to accept our own limited being, our true nature. He writes after a period of deep depression, "I now know myself to be a person of weakness and strength, liability and giftedness, darkness and light. I now know that to be whole means to reject none of it, but to embrace all of it." We're asked to embrace all the parts that make up our wholeness, even the ugly bits. It's all part of ourself. We're asked to live from that place wholly, openly, and joyfully. What can you do to honor and embrace your you-ness, to give yourself love, even the parts of yourself that you wish might be different? A quote from Brené Brown coincidentally appeared in my inbox last week. She says, "Owning our story and loving ourselves through that process is the bravest thing we will ever do. The message is to embrace and go forward with your one you." Later on in the service, you'll hear three members talk about times in their lives that brought this home to them. We hold in our hearts those among us who are dealing with challenging issues, loss, economic threat, illness, difficulties in child rearing, or any of the other circumstances that we humans find painful. Our hearts are gladdened for those among us who are finding love, success, recovery, or otherwise just feeling good. We are glad that you all came here together to be in this beloved community. May your joys multiply and your sorrows divide. Blessed be. An individual's value system provides a framework within which they act in ways that are consistent and expected. Integrity can be seen as the state of acting congruently and authentically within a given framework. We are now going to hear from three members who will give us illustrations of living congruently, wholly, within their framework of integrity. All three will speak from a single perspective, that of being a parent. We've all had some experience of parenting. After all, we've all had parents, sometimes us a long time ago. And while the speaker's situations might be different from yours, you may not be a parent, you may be heavily involved in a career, or you may be retired and searching for a way to contribute, etc. The principles that these speakers will talk about are all universal, and I'm sure will resonate in some way for each of us.
Thank you, Liz. In the fall of 1989, my husband and I were both working full-time, and our two children, ages 4 and 5, were in daycare. To say that life was busy is an understatement. The bedtime routine usually went well, but on one particular night, Caitlin just wouldn't settle down. 3 drinks of water and as many trips to the bathroom later, I lost it. My patience, that is. I was desperate to be off duty, go to bed myself, read my book, anything but sit with her for yet another tiny pee session. In my frustration, I said, "Just go to bed, KK," and I slapped her thigh as she was sitting on the toilet. Of course, then I started to cry, and she said, "Don't worry, Mama, it will heal." That was a watershed moment. Something had to change. The next day, I took a sheet of paper and in one column lined up what was most important in my life. My children, my marriage, my health, my friends, my work. In the next column, I lined up where my time and energy was going. No surprise that the most important things were not getting the best of me. In fact, my work, which was well down on my list of important things, was getting most of my time and energy. My family, which was the most important thing, was getting the dregs, me after a long day of work. My goal became to realign my life so that what I valued most got the very best of me. The universe conspired on my behalf in giving me a very supportive boss, and our family had the financial means to consider reducing my income. I realized that not everyone is so fortunate. I asked for a 9-month leave without pay so our family could catch its collective breath. It was granted, and for January to September, I got to be an at-home mom. It felt like I had stepped off a treadmill set at top speed. Now each day stretched out at a luxurious pace, with enough time to do what was needed and have fun. What became crystal clear to me during my leave was that I didn't want to hop back on that cranked up treadmill when my leave ended. So I approached my boss once more and asked to work part-time. The job I was in wasn't suitable for part-time work, but I was content to take a less challenging job, even though it was a demotion. I needed to put my work in its proper place. I basically worked the school hours for 10 years, walking with my elementary school kids in the morning and being there at 3 o'clock to walk home with them at the end of each day, being around to drive my junior high kids to soccer or basketball or the mall after school, and quietly keeping tabs on the myriad of other interests that young teens have. The integrity realignment was a success, matching my time and energy to my values was like putting the pieces of our family's life together and creating wholeness. I know I was very privileged to be able to work part-time during those years, and I am ever grateful for that.
Good morning. So I wrote quite a nice little anecdote about coffee and tea, about how I've abandoned my hopes of ever becoming a tea drinker, because I prefer the highly caffeinated substance instead. But shortly after sending this draft to Liz, I realized it's not right. It's just not me. Integrity is about embracing your whole self exactly as you are. Unitarian Universalism is the acceptance that we are all worthy and safe to embrace even the darkest recesses of our souls and inner being. So let's be honest here. 19 months ago, I had a baby. It was the sweetest and most fulfilling thing I've ever done in my whole entire life. However, I've written this piece while seated on the edge of his bed, watching over him as he sleeps, because he's teething. And it's 11 p.m. on a Saturday night. We're entertaining guests, so my husband is currently socializing and enjoying the evening. And I'm here, sitting in my son's bedroom, and letting him know that he's okay, that he's safe, and that he's loved. It's a difficult place to be, this transition between independence and parenthood, between letting ourselves go and finding so much more in somebody else. There's so much to learn, so much to watch shift, and so much to observe and so much to accept. Integrity is about finding the warmth and acceptance towards all parts of ourselves. It's not always rainbows and butterflies. It's sacrifice. It's being screamed at. It's being kicked in the face while you're already changing a poopy diaper. It's about understanding. It's frustration. It's sadness. And it's life. He stirs beside me now, wrapping both his arms around my forearm and preventing me from typing at a ridiculous pace as quickly as my mind's racing. But his little arms are wrapped around my arm. That love, that warmth, the deep, calm breath as he resettles. The Oxford English Dictionary defines integrity as the condition of having no part or element taken away or wanting, undivided or unbroken, material wholeness, completeness, entirety. Take a moment to let that settle in. Wholeness, completeness, entirety, wanting for nothing. At this point, I accidentally hit the CD-ROM icon and start up Mary Poppins. He wakes, he settles, he goes back to sleep. Not wanting any element taken away, not wanting for anything. Can such terms truly occupy the same space, the same me? To be honest, because that's what this is really all about, really, I don't know. I'm learning. I'm observing. I'm trying to embrace the highs and the lows of parenthood, the loss of independence, the joy of being so completely depended on. Right now, I do want for nothing.
Well, don't you just want sometimes to all the work to be done and just go to the beach? It doesn't work that way. Until quite recently, I thought integrity was sticking to your principles no matter what. Not enough people were immovable from their grounded ethics of doing and being the right thing, I harumphed. The right thing being, of course, whatever matched my sense of doing no harm, be the change kind of ethics. Well, life being what it is, I'm not so sure anymore. Two things happened recently to remind me that integrity is simply one part of a much greater whole. I attended a ceremony a month or so ago at the Victoria Courthouse, where 15 new lawyers were sworn into their profession. The justice spoke to them about three key qualities found in a lawyer of high standards, an oxymoron for some people, I'm sure. Listing integrity first, then civility, and independence. Integrity, civility, independence. I thought. Well, what he said still echoes, because really, it's a particularly resonant recipe for the wholeness we find in wisdom. In our common Unitarian language, I would replace civility with compassion and independence with interdependence. Wisdom, then, would be a swirling blend of integrity, compassion, and interdependence, the whole, then, more than the sum of its parts, and always a movable blend, sometimes more integrity, sometimes more compassion, but forever grounded within our awareness of independence. Now, the next thing that caused a wrinkle in my hardened stance on the integrity of the right and wrong happened a few days later when my granddaughter and I were talking about her new grade 2 year. "Oh, it's way easier this year," she says, "'cause I know how to read and write now." And she said that with the satisfied tone of, really, there can't be very many more difficult things to learn. But there is one problem, she said. There's a kid who pushes people off the monkey bars a lot. Oh, I said, I wonder why he does that, I asked. Well, he doesn't know about shiny hearts and black hearts, she said, jumping up and down on the trampoline, so it's harder for him to know how to be nice. Too bad, eh, Alma? Indeed. Shiny hearts and black hearts is our family's shorthand for teaching ethics. As my kids and now grandkids grow into themselves, we talk about how do you make decisions about actions? How do you know what is the right thing to do? When they were littlest, we talk of how feelings matter and how what you do can make your heart shinier or blacker. If you are trying to figure out what to do, we say, take a moment, look inside and see what would your heart look like afterwards. If you bite your brother, does your heart shine or is it blacker? The black hearts, shiny hearts picture resonates beyond just children. At Jazz Vespers here last month, the wonderful Maureen Washington sang this blues song which featured these words. Well, where's Shauna when you need somebody to sing, eh? 'Cause your hands may be strong, but the feeling's all wrong. Your heart is as black as night. So it's an adult thing that we see too. As the children in our family come into the age of reason, we add the next layer, talking about how what you do has consequences, not just inside yourself, but also in the wider world. Would what you did or are thinking of doing add to the world or take away from the world? What does it look like if you throw garbage on the ground or shoot at that bird? Our actions create our shared future. Shiny hearts, black hearts. Compassion for ourselves and others. Add to the world, take away. Integrity of thought and deed. We've all felt those precious times in life, however fleeting they can be, when it all comes together for that moment. The integrity, the compassion, the interdependence, and there's that hum deep inside, that wholeness of wisdom. And wisdom, unlike the my way or the highway type integrity, moves us all forward with love. May it ever be so.
Thank you all. In the words of William E. Gardner, we all have two religions, the religion we talk about and the religion we live. It is our task to make the difference between the two as small as possible. In closing, here are the words of Reverend Robert R. Walsh. I am wondrously wrought, partly shaped by biology, partly shaped by culture, and partly self-shaped. I know that I have the power to choose among many paths, yet most of the time I'm on automatic pilot, acting out of little examined assumptions, values, rituals, myths, appetites, impulses. I can meet life in many ways. I can be tough-minded. I can be tender-hearted. I can move between activity and quietness. I can express my uniqueness and individuality, and I can forget myself in commitment to family and community. I can judge, I can bear witness to the good and evil around me, and I can forgive. I can analyze, theologize, figure the world out, and I can listen to the still small voice of conscience, intuition, the Holy Spirit. All these ways of meeting life and more are part of the potential that is me, but I'm afraid to move very far or very fast from the ways that have become comfortable. I see the self-knowledge that may illuminate new possibilities in life, and I seek the courage to try them. Most of all, I pray for wholeness, for a life in which my many ways of living can be connected and filled with the meaning of holy creation. So be it, blessed be, and amen.